Welcome to season 7 of the Making a Marketer podcast with your hosts, Megan Powers with Powers of Marketing and Jen Cole with Gretiman Group and Xstand. The show is for all levels of experience, talking marketing, business, and branding with the brightest of minds as our guests. Lots of learning and laughing. Here we go. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 146 of the Making a Marketer podcast. I'm Megan Powers, Powers of Marketing. I'm flying solo host-wise today. Jen had a family obligation. So like the days of old, and I used to do the lives by myself. And my lovely guest today is my friend and rock star, Troy Sandage. Welcome, Troy.
Hey, Megan. Glad to be back. 146. Let's go.
What? You know, it's funny as I'm like, do I really need to see Kane? I kind of screwed myself in the beginning by saying the number. And so now I kind of just feel like I've had to roll with it. I don't know. Maybe in season 8, I'll let it go, but we'll see. But I'm so happy to have you here. And those who have been listening to us for a while know that he has been on before he was last with us, though it's been almost 3 years. It was May 17th. I think of
crazy
of 21. So that was episode 81. And then before that, your first show on with us was episode 65. But let me read your bio here. Troy Sandage is a growth strategist who builds sustainable, scalable, and profitable strategies, systems, and solutions, generating $175 million in client revenue and launching over 35 brands worldwide. The 5X agency builder, 3X founder, fractional CMO, author, startup advisor, global speaker and MC, and co-founder of Season 3 Media has over 15 years of experience helping brands drive revenue, establish brand resonance, cultivating community development, and create social impact. He is the host of the Webby-nominated Top 50 Digital Marketing Sales Podcast, I Digress, and co-host of his new podcast with Christina Kay, Unfiltered Growth, Real Talk on Trends and Strategies. I love it. That was one of my questions for you. So we'll dig in a little bit more on that. But let's just talk about what you've been up to. What are you doing these days professionally? You've published a book and done, like, this crazy, amazing podcast that you have and all that good stuff. So what's going on?
I think it's amazing how, for those who are like OG listeners and watchers of Making a Marketer, you have seen me grow from a baby marketer and beyond over the years. And so it's amazing how when you reflect back, it shocks me. I'm like, where was I at in 2017? Like, so much has happened since then. But now I'm launching a new venture, Season 3 Media, with my co-founder, Christina Kay, which, if you've been under a rock, we were co-hosting Inbound last year, and then we did a live correspondence the year before that, and the After Hours show the year before that. And so if you're seeing a pattern, we just decided, let's add a podcast into the mix while we're trying to grow this business. So that's always fun. And for some reason, this is my fifth time doing this thing. I probably have a problem, or I'm really good at it. Either way, we'll find out very soon. But marketing's changed. I first joined your show, I was obsessed over social media marketing. The second time, we're still on social, but I was kind of getting out of it a little bit. And now I've really evolved and went more into growth marketing and RevOps and really figuring out how to take creative and quantifying that and tying it back to revenue aesthetic goals. So it's been a journey. Marketing is challenging and hard, y'all. It never ends.
Absolutely. And I mean, and everybody's kind of been with me along for my journey through it. And, you know, making that decision to go step away from social media. Obviously, we still need to do it to promote what we do, right? And for our own businesses and for the podcast. But it's like not something I want to be doing for other people. And I see that we're not alone, Troy. There's a whole new generation of folks that are coming in to do it. It's a lot of us are like kind of passing the baton, I feel like.
I agree. And whether you want to count into different mediums and those who have been top tier are burned out. We're not going to learn a new platform. We're not going to build this sweat equity. We don't care. We don't make sense. Or just honestly, it doesn't make sense to your business model. Right. And that's okay. You know, we went from being hunger hooky hippos, we got to go catch them all on every platform known to mankind in the early years. Now it's like, let's just pick one that serves us financially. And if we try other ones, great. And that's okay.
Yeah, I'm spending most of my time these days on LinkedIn. And that is, for me, that's the best use of my time. But I am also posting to Twitter and Instagram and, you know, that kind of good stuff, because there's still opportunity there. Facebook, people are still on Facebook. Every time I go on there, I'm like, people are still here, like, and really engaging with each other and still interacting and sharing so much of their lives. And I feel like, in a way, I'm like out of it. But also, it's kind of nice to not feel like a slave to it anymore.
Very, you know, very, I mean? Well said. Yeah, it's definitely a problem. But also, I mean, hey, the whole Facebook, Instagram went down today too, not to date this episode or anything. So it's always interesting, regardless of what happens in the world. I think Christina Garnett said it best, Twitter is where we all go for a fire alarm. Everything goes totally down. We just come walking back single file line back to Twitter.
That's funny. That is accurate. Yeah. But like, see, I haven't been on, I'm working in events primarily. And so I pop in and out throughout the day, but because I don't want to just post and ghost, I'm still trying to follow the, you know, the guidelines. But yeah. So, all right. So talk about this agency and what you're, so you and Christina, you share the stage at
Inbound.
Inbound. I'm like, what's that show called? And that's how your relationship started, right? She works for HubSpot. Doesn't she work for HubSpot? Or did she work for HubSpot?
She should. I shouldn't say it. I don't care. She's an OG HubSpot elite, but she was a board advisor on one of the platforms with HubSpot, very well known in that area and that spectrum. And so it's funny how our paths cross, and we just, again, keeping in touch. And we both found ourselves in a very particular situation that, Megan, we both know and have our own moments as well. And we found ourselves, instead of wallowing in the change, we just did something spontaneous. Like, you know what? You're good at this. I'm good at that. We have a good chemistry. Let's just build this thing. And honestly, I have you to thank for a lot of it, because I still, to this day, will never forget our road trip. So one of the highlights moments of that year.
Yeah.
And I was anchoring on, you know, I'm transitioning into events. I really want to dive into event-led growth and event marketing. One, as now an emerging extrovert, I love events. And I was like, you know what? I wouldn't have a problem traveling all over, driving community, driving UGC, driving impact, while proving events can be very marketable and profitable. Especially now, we're a few years removed from COVID, and people want that human reaction that they're not getting. And so we saw it as an opportunity, and now we're building the thing. Ironically enough, we are going to be co-MCs at Innovate, not to get confused with Inbound, in a few months from now. And we're just starting to get stuff lined up for the Q2, Q3, and Q4.
Okay. So I do think maybe I was a little, she was on a couple of panels with you at Podcast Movement, right? Is that where my confusion?
We shared an after hour show on Inbound in 22. And then we did some social media lives and things like that in 23.
Got it. I just saw you on the computer. It wasn't live and in person. Is it real or is it Memorex? You're probably too young to even know what that means. Moving on. Okay. So as you said, like, online has transitioned to other things for you. So I feel like you have a lot of examples of where you have turned online relationships into pixie dust. Like, so let's start with your most recent example that you posted about. You shared a stage with Maria Elena Duran. So you met her 10 years ago on Twitter, right? Brand chat. So I would love to hear a little bit about how that evolution was and the experience speaking with her. That wasn't the first time you met her in person, was it?
That was the second time we've met in person.
Okay.
So I started my first corporate job on August 4th, 2014. The only reason I remember that date is ingrained in my mind. And then, you know, the panic sets in, because you're like, how do I market this business? And this was around the time social media was really driving the levers where you can tap into to actually create opportunities to drive revenue, create more clients, where it was like the Wild Wild West. And, you know, everyone's getting gold nuggets out here.
Yeah, and it wasn't all pay to play.
Traffic.
Yeah.
Conversation, yeah. Believe it or not. And I'll never forget, I was on Twitter, I was modifying some things, and I just stumbled across Brand Chat. I was like, what in the world is Brand Chat? And Maria was leading it. She was sharing some nuggets. And I just followed it. I made some notes. I think my first week when we went back and I went back. And I'm a person that, you know, I want to get in. I want to tinker. I'm a big visionary. So I'm like, hey, Maria, I'm happy to connect. I love Brand Chat. And I just started engaging. I started being very active, have my notes, all that jazz. I mean, Twitter chats were master classes back in the day, y'all. If y'all weren't there during the golden era, I mean, you could talk to all these top leaders and they were just dropping gems. Mm-hmm. And for those who had corporate jobs that you was able to kind of just be on a computer, not be bothered, I might have spent 3 hours, 4 hours a day just in and out of Twitter chats, engaging, all that jazz. And, you know, I think a year in or maybe max 2 years in, Maria said, hey, you know, we got a lot going on. Would you want to be a moderator? And when there was four of us at the time, I was part of the chat. And I thought, you know, that you could have just basically told me I was verified on Twitter. I was that excited about it. And I started leading, thinking of things. And we just kept going, kept getting bigger. We partnered with Buffer, did a global chat at one point that lasted a couple of hours.
Wow.
We did a continuation. We got a lot of different themes involved. It was fun. And what I will say, we may think of that as a linear relationship, but it's the additional layers, you know. I always say, yeah, let's connect on Twitter. Are we going to connect on LinkedIn as another layer? And then you probably will get to Facebook at some point. Now I'm in your personal life. And
right,
maybe we'll exchange phone numbers and emails and, you know, do an off-screen conversation to really cement the relationship. And I just always stayed in touch. She was my mentor. Eventually, she became a big sister to me. And we just kept the pulse going. And almost every time I had a career change, you know, I would reach out to her and just ask, you know, here's my thoughts. Does my resume look okay? Here's what I'm looking at as marketing. Does this make sense? And she was always affirming. She was always open to my ideas. And she basically never stopped encouraging me to pursue whatever idea I had. And you need people like that in your life as you're pursuing a career that's forever changing, forever evolving. Because for many of you all who are watching and listening, and you are a marketer, sometimes the brand you work with or the type of marketing you do becomes your identity. And when you have to pivot and change because there's no money in it no more, mm-hmm. you're not enjoying it no more, you keep it 100 or other things, you know, stack on, we have to have those pivots. You kind of lose some friends along the way. But when you can find those friends that see you and love you and appreciate you for who you are, as regardless of what role you're in, where you live or what you do, and they transition with you, that's the benefit. So fast forward, bringing this to a close.
Yeah.
We've always stayed in touch and we actually ended up working together for a company for like 8 months. It was really a cool time. And then later on, she was a keynote speaker, a marketing conference. And she referred me to be the next keynote speaker the following year, had a few conversations and boom. And lo and behold, our second time meeting ever was at this location. We both shared stages and let's just say a few tears might have been shed, a lot of hugs. And, you know, it's amazing to me how I've only met her twice in my 10 years of knowing her, but she's been one of the most pivotal people in my career and ultimately in my life from online that converted into an IRL experience.
Right. I mean, obviously, as part of that, like you said, you have to make an effort. You and I have been very out of touch. We keep saying, we got to catch up. But like, it's like no time has passed, right? And we've known each other only for like 6 years now. It was during 2020 on Clubhouse is how we met. Back in the day when people use Clubhouse, are people on Clubhouse anymore? I don't even know. But it was like in those early days where you could just be in a room with like 10 or 12 people and talk about whatever and like really, you know, get to know people. And it was obviously was a time that we all needed something like that. But I don't know. I think it was pretty awesome how that kind of evolved.
And I loved how, you know, we met a little before that, but we cemented it on Clubhouse and we kept it going. And I think, you know, like you said, time can go by, but if you ever really needed me, you're like, hey, you know, all right, I'm showing up. And you build that rapport, you're putting those coins in of trust and you just knowing that person will be present for when you need them. And that's very critical. It transcends career. It transcends, hey, I'm trying to get something from you. I'm genuinely just trying to be a good human and be there for you when I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you think makes the difference in the friendships and business that come from relationships that are established online beyond what we've already mentioned. You know, obviously putting the coins in, as you said, keeping in touch. What are things that people can do to build relationships online that they can then convert?
Definitely try to lock in something that's beyond whatever the primary function was, whether it was business or friendship. If it's business, I always say, like, what shows do you like? I'm sure there's something we can both connect to that when it comes on, I'm going to think of you. If I can associate that person with something that's going to at some point remind me of that person, that's a very subtle way to just be present in someone's life and be concurrent with what's happening. I was just talking with another friend of mine, Donna Gunn, who ironically, we met through Twitter Spaces and became really close friends after the fact. And I was saying how, you know, in your online ecosystem of friends, you're going to have those tiers. And I think tiers kind of helped me because there's been times, I'm sure Megan, you know this too, of experiences, you might have extended more into someone you met online than they reciprocated and misinterpreted. This person can go the distance with me and they only can go so far. And so I've learned to really lean into the tier method as I'm cultivating, developing, or expanding online relationships. That protects me from not exerting more into something until it's apparent this makes sense. And two, that puts me in the right way to look at relationships in the right way. So I don't feel some type of way if, you know, if they're only a conference friend, and we maybe go to one or two conferences together, we're like buddy-buddy best friends, and then we never talk anymore. I don't take it personal. That's a conference friend.
Right.
If they're just there for Twitter chats or they're just to exchange on certain things, that's okay.
Hey, man, I've had conference boyfriends too. So, you know, man, that can happen.
That's a thing, you know. Conference work husbands, you know.
Yeah, totally.
And it's okay. I think that actually puts things in perspective. Not everyone is going to eventually, you know, I'll tell you that surprised me. Phil Gerb, we've known each other for a very long time. He was actually the first person to have me on a live stream ever. I was a wreck that day, believe it or not. And fast forward, I think a month ago, he texted me out the blue. He knew I had moved. And he's like, hey, I'm driving back home. What you doing? I'm like, nothing, just watching some sports. And sure enough, in less than 90 minutes, he showed up at my house and we hugged and it didn't even, we went in the basement. We had a great time laughing, getting all deep. Megan, I tell you this, all sincerity, it didn't even process until he left. That was the first time I ever met him in my life. I'm like, are you serious? We've never met at a conference before. We have very similar circles. We've never met in person to this moment. That's the dynamic power of just keeping that pulse check. And that's also when people are breaking to the next tiers in your online circle, it just makes it more valuable for sure.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think you've like gone into business with some people and you've had some positive experiences and some not as positive experiences on that front. I think that speaks to you continue to trust people, despite that,
that's
but you better have contracts, man. You better get things in writing, have an attorney.
I'm trying, girl.
I'm just saying. That is the thing I've seen that kind of sucks when people are good friends and go into business together and things don't work out. And then it's like, not just for the personal reasons, but then if things weren't set contract-wise, it can get a little dicey. Okay, so my podcast, This Little Thing, has helped me meet so many people over the last 7 years. Also helped to solidify online friendships that I've also made. And then a lot of those people I've ended up being able to see in person at conferences as well. So you have a solo show, which you were talking about maybe making an interview show, but you haven't published since January and you're on episode 99. So that's part one. And then you did mention, you know, that you were thinking about doing an interview show. So this is the new podcast. So what's the plan with I Digress is the name of his solo show. That's at 99. He's just waiting on a certain someone for episode 100, maybe. What's the plan? And tell me about the new show.
Yeah. Solo hosting is hard, y'all.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it's been 3 years and I'm just sitting there. I was burnt out in February. So Black Christian Month, the brother took a rest month. So episode 100 is definitely on its way. And I'm going to be making some tweaks and changes to I Digress after. So for those who have been screaming for certain things, it's coming.
Okay.
It's coming. And don't blow me up at once. I already have a list of people I might be doing some things with when that time comes. But outside of that, Unfiltered Growth, a new podcast. Definitely, you know, I always love interviewing people, and I love interviewing people with multiple people. So Christina is a firecracker. She takes no BS from nobody, straight shooter. And so very complimentary, because I'm more of a mediator, if you will. So I think I'm going to have some fun bringing on different guests. And it doesn't have to be specifically marketing, but we really want to just be real about everything. And I think our goal is to spotlight a lot of diverse voices. So not the same traditional people who have been legacy top leaders that everyone knows in quotes. I want to bring in the new people. I want to bring in marginalized communities, women leaders who are on the emerge and all the different things. We really want to show that DIBA can be a center focus of a podcast, and people will want to listen and hear their stories, not just in their careers and success, but in their struggles and the obstacles that many times goes unknown, unacknowledged, you know, and we do want to spotlight that as well. But we also want to bring some culture. We're both sneakerheads. We allow a lot of different things. So we're going to bring some salsa and some power into the mix as well. And our third seat, who is going to be helping us die, she's going to spotlight a lot of businesses on the rise, whether startups and angel investors and things like that too. So we're going to bring a lot of variety to Unfiltered Growth. It's going to be a lot of fun and different for me. Because now, honestly, it's probably going to be great for me, because I can just be a talking head right. And just kind of go at it. So I'm going to get some pointers from you.
Oh, I don't know. What? So are you going to keep it indie, or do you have a network?
Actually, we did sign. So I Digress is part of the Upswell Podcast Network. Right. And Unfiltered Growth is part of the Guru Podcast Network, which is owned by Guru Media. Jay Swettelson and his team navigating that venture and expanding on that too. So somehow my podcast... both are on two different networks, and we're just kind of navigating.
All right. That's cool. Diversification is a good thing. As we know, in case anything happens with one place, like for me, if I have to move my podcast, I just move my podcast, right? Like you just kind of actually, you used to lose the stats, but I heard there's a tool now that like lets you take them with you. But I digress. You see what I did there.
We see.
Okay. So what do you think podcasting? It's funny because I listen to some, and there's one I listen to and she's like, everybody has a podcast because all these famous people starting podcasts and stuff. Yeah. What are your thoughts on like the future of podcasting? You're starting another one. So obviously you still firmly believe in the medium. What do you think our listeners should be looking for in terms of how things are moving?
Podcasting now is helping people become media hubs. And I think, ultimately, for me, podcasting is keeping me honest to create that could help me with my sales pipeline and marketing efforts. If you're creative or you're running a business, if I can just record for an hour or two and take those sound bites, I know there's tools like Cast Magic and other tools that can output it in different venues and ways, then why not? Why not do it? So I just find that to be a very good tool to kind of like force yourself to create content consistently. And if you can tie in money to it, by all means, you know?
Right. Well, and that's the thing about being on a network is they kind of own that, right? They take the responsibility of getting the sponsorships. Do they not?
It depends on the network. So thankfully, I own my IP on both networks. So if for some reason I were to leave, I have the rights to the show. I can continue on. To be transparent, that's not always the case. So definitely read your contracts accordingly, know your worth. One of the networks does not handle sponsorships. That's directly on me. The other one, there's kind of a co-op thing where, hey, you bring in sponsorships, we will handle all your editing from your podcast to blog content to video content for you for free for a certain cut percentage of the sponsorship. So if you've been a sponsor for a podcast for a long time, to me, that's a good deal. You know, y'all can take a certain cut and I can keep it moving and still make a little money off the top. But definitely read your terms and know kind of, network isn't for everybody. If you're a very intense creative and you approach your podcast like an artist, network is probably not what you want, because there's going to be a certain type of guideline you're going to have to follow and compromise in some categories. But if you're trying to build credibility or hopefully create another revenue stream, it could be a good viable option.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in a lot of corporations, it's like podcasting is maybe the number one medium that people start and give up on, like, more quickly than anything else. So yeah, I totally agree with you on the consistency thing. And there are different ways to monetize it, right? Like, I have opted to not have sponsorships so far. I do have a company that I've been talking to that I'm woefully behind getting back to, but it has to make sense to me to take it. And I like money. Money's good. But also, this show has indirectly been monetized for me by me being invited to host other shows where I've, you know, like, sought out a network, like a media company that didn't have a podcast. Like, how do you not have a podcast? And in both those cases, I did such a great job that they're like, oh, we could just do it ourselves. We'll take it in-house. So one of them is not on the air anymore. And the other one is still going. So that's good. It's just kind of funny. People think, oh, everybody's doing it. Must be easy, right?
If I was creating an Instagram account, TikTok account, don't mean it's easy. Stay viable. You still run an newsletter. You're still doing email. I mean, podcasting is very hard. I'm surprised after everything I've gone through, I was going to be done at episode 100 and leave. And I started a new one. So it's like, what is my problem?
Well, I mean, it's like anything else. If you enjoy it, you know, keep rolling. And that's what Jen and I have been saying. Like, as long as we enjoyed what we're doing, we'll keep going. But it's good to, like,
how do you, as a co-host dynamic duo, like, manage that as long as y'all have for the show?
So I own the majority of the prep work, and I own all the production on it, but we do share the task of writing questions and getting guests, and we're good friends. We both know, like, if the other one, we'll pick up the slack for the other person, and if we feel like the other person is, you know, it's like falling off, it's like not personal. It's like definitely because of something that's going on. So, yeah, I think it's just keeping communication open. And there have been times when I've been like, I need more help. Like, I need to not be the only one doing this, that, or the other thing. So, yeah, I think just making sure you have an understanding up front about, like, what it is you're trying to accomplish and like, you know, who's doing what, and make sure that you check in with each other every now and then, you know, to make sure that, you still like what we're doing, you know, or do you maybe want to do something different on the team or whatever? Yeah. And I did have, there were three of us for the first two seasons. So, yeah. So that was like managing schedules with a guest. That was probably the hardest part, managing schedules with a guest and with all three of us. So we would just record work whenever. We didn't do any lives back in the beginning. Then I started just doing lives by myself because it was just easier to not have to schedule another, like, because we do two a month. Or is yours going to be, what's your frequency going to be?
The plan is weekly. And it may be weekly with the guests, then one with us, or like a recap. It may, you know, the network's going to help us kind of expand, but I'm just trying to gauge up hype increase. I mean, the waiting list shouldn't be a problem. It's, I have a certain criteria of who I want on. I just don't want anyone on. That's just my personal vendetta. Right. However people run their podcasts, it's their business.
Yeah.
It's definitely, but I'm taking some notes from you. I've been, you know, trying to figure out what's the best way to do this without losing my mind.
Well, weekly is hard. At one point I had three shows I was hosting, and I was doing two a month so I was doing six episodes a month. It was crazy, but I mean, I love it. And they were all like different topic, all different kind of things that I was covering. And so there was like a little bit of a different twist to them. Okay. So I have one final question for you. We've been asking all of our guests these days, what is one business challenge? You can only pick one you've experienced in your career, and how did you overcome it? Or what did you learn from it that may help our listeners?
Oh, I know. I can only pick only one. I feel like I'm navigating 20 right now. But the ones that is screaming the most to me is knowing when to make a change. I think we have to have that balance of, yeah, I'm going to pursue this vision of what I want. But if for some reason demand isn't there, I'm either talking to the wrong people, what I'm saying isn't making sense, or my offer doesn't matter. And no matter how we may internally feel this is the best thing and it makes sense in our minds, it may not make sense to other people. And that's a hard thing to navigate, whether you have pride or ego or you're just so passionate about it. Sometimes you got to put that to the side. What's the best course of action for where I'm at financially and emotionally, mentally, to navigate that? And I find that is the biggest reason why people quit or fail, is because they don't know how to evolve or make a change or, you know, retool when they're clearly being shown, the universe is telling you, some ain't making sense here. And I've currently been navigating that the last couple of months. And so it's been fun. Fun to navigate that and make modifications accordingly.
No, for sure. And I think if, you know, the past 4 years have taught us nothing else, it's that being ready for change is something that we should all be positioned to be ready for change. Even you don't have to have like things in place to jump ship or to do something different. But I think this is like, and I'm doing Thoughtful Thursdays now. I used to do Monday Musings. And what resonated with a lot of people for last week is that I'm keeping my what I'm doing diverse. So I have this, I have a client still for my business. And I have a jobby job. I have a full-time job in events at Oracle, and it's contract job, which inherently is temporary, right? But hopefully I'm going to get renewed. But I also don't, it's like, cool, like what's next? But that's just kind of how my career has evolved like that. I got laid off 7.5 months into my first job out of college. So I was like, okay, this is how this goes. And, you know, and then, so then I just have always been ready. And that's, you know, it's fun to diversify. But also then you're not left without anything, you know, if something doesn't work out.
For real, I think my first job navigating was with engineering and marketing, and then lost this job, switched gears, changed this, changed that, podcast, which allowed me to create a book and speak on stages now and all those other things. And I mean, yeah, we look at where people get to and like, wow, look at all the things you've done. I made a lot of changes, a lot of forks in the road. I had to switch hats and do things that most people maybe wouldn't have done. I did a lot of odd jobs too. I wasn't always just a marketer,
right?
Whatever you want to do. I have no shame in saying I worked 3 jobs twice in the same year. I was a CMO of a company and I was doing Amazon at night to make rent and do things because they were a growing business and I just needed what we needed to do. But I learned a lot of different things. And then you apply that to other parts of your life. So it's okay to have change. Honestly, change keeps us young, keeps us growing and evolving, because who wants to be stagnant and be in the same place for 20 years and you look up and you have nothing to show for it and you haven't learned anything new. You're outdated.
Right.
Deal with that.
For sure. Yeah. So to take this full circle, you know, those relationships that you're establishing online, whether it's on Twitter, yes, I still call it that, or LinkedIn, or wherever it may be, really like see the value in that. And not that you have to like A-list, B-list, C-list people, kind of like what I was picturing when you were talking about tiers. but, you know, keep in mind those folks out there who you admire and who you learn from, let them know. And even if it's just a comment here and there on posts that they make, like really engaging with people online can bring magical things, as it has for our friend Troy Sandage.
I second that. Put the effort in. You never know. Yeah. You never know who may be around the corner to be your next opportunity, be that mental health you need at that moment in that life. And honestly, I make an effort of I literally have a Notion board. And when I make a good connection, I'll make a note of what's the last thing we talked about, where they're at in their life, where they work at. So when I come back to them again, I can just pull up on my phone, on my computer, be reminded and show like, hey, I pay attention. Those smaller things matter a lot.
Yeah. My brother used to walk around with a little notebook that he would write in, and he would write like exactly that, like what they talked about. And then so if he, you know, met him again, then he would have that to reference, which I just think that's super. I like that a lot. That's super smart. I have a friend here, actually, my friend whose home I'm doing this podcast from, because there's jackhammering going on right outside my window of my office. She does the same thing. We both write in notes when we meet people, like at our neighborhood bar and stuff. We write, like, you know, to help ourselves remember. Super smart. Yeah.
Getting older, you gotta write everything down.
Well, that too. I mean, dementia, it's hopefully it's not around the corner, but some days I feel like I'm in the beginning stages. All that to say, thank you for being on with us. This is a really fun conversation. I hope that our listeners, you know, learned a little bit about, just sparked some things, right, for them to, what little things they can do to keep relationships online going and potentially take them offline. Go to a Cubs game and take a road trip to Ohio. You never know. All right. Awesome. Thanks for being with us. And his book is called
Strategize. I was ready this time.
All right. Yeah, I have it. It's not signed, but it's just because I ordered it online. I just was like, I want it. And I just ordered it from Amazon. But I've already lent it to my niece. And yeah, so go and get that, y'all. And then you can find them on all the socials at Find Troy. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, friends, this has been episode 146 of the Making a Marketer podcast, and we will catch you next time.